Thank you for joining us and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. And for those of you that have been listening, sending in questions and comments, thank you so much. Please continue. Help spread the word that every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases, entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. Now, if you can't listen live, all of our shows, including this one, can be found at answers.network. And I want you to know I'd really appreciate it if you could all do me a wonderful favor. Please forward one of our shows to your social media group and to someone you know who can benefit from a particular subject. This is one powerful way that we can make a positive difference in the world together. Now, as you know, the show is called Answers, so we have questions. And our question today is, can optimizing our health take us from surviving to thriving in both our family and business lives? Now, to answer that question and more, from the start of her career as an occupational therapist, our guest, Genevieve Hawkins, has had a passion for understanding and influencing the psychology of how people not just cope, but thrive under pressure. This passion led her to further explore how leaders, teams, and cultures perform, which led her to switch from the health system to the consulting within the corporate world. Now, Genevieve is now a senior executive with extensive experience in leading major changes and major programs in large organizations, and is cognizant on how typically seeing things from a different perspective, given her mix of experiences and qualifications. Now, by linking their own mental health with the mental health of their team and the organization's performance, Genevieve provides leaders of all kinds practical, relatable, and scalable guidance. Now, in our ever-changing, complex world, how we lead has become an increasingly critical skill. Genevieve hopes that her new book, Mentally at Work, Optimizing Health and Business Performance, can guide leaders to lead in a sustainable way for them, their teams, their families, and their businesses, so that we may collectively reverse the trend on mental illness throughout the world. Genevieve, welcome to Answers Network.
Thank you, Alan. It is delighted. I'm absolutely delighted to be here.
Well, it is certainly my pleasure, as someone who has worked in the mental health field as well for some time. I think it's so important, especially now with what's going on, with what we're seeing coming out of the COVID pandemic and such, that there seems to be this huge increase in mental health issues that I think are going not necessarily unnoticed, but unchecked. What's your thoughts in regards to how things are changing, and especially over the last, say, 3 years?
So I agree there's an increase in levels of anxiety and depression, particularly across the globe. And in fact, the tsunami was coming pre-COVID. So there was concerns really in the way that our world was changing, and that was causing some increases in these concerns. But most definitely COVID and a whole range of other things all combining now, it is just like the perfect storm that are making things worse. And there's an element behind this for me around how our brains work. And our brains are so focused on two things. They look for certainty and they look for connection. So our animal brain, right at the base, we're not even conscious. We hunt for certainty, we hunt for connection. And in a world of COVID over the last few years, that certainty has been completely thrown off kilter because we haven't known what's going on. And then you layer that on top with the concerns we've got from a climate change point of view, the concerns you see globally in terms of things like the war with Russia and Ukraine and what that's done to supply chains across the world. Or you look at even domestically within any country, and certainly from afar we see this for America as well as what we see in Australia, is these kind of polarizing views on the world and how to manage things. All of that is increasing this level of uncertainty and increasing the level of disconnection across the globe. And for me, that's actually what's driving the biggest concerns that we see in terms of the amount of mental ill health around.
Now, I like that you brought up this polarization. Obviously, everybody knows it's in the news. If they don't, they're sleeping under a rock somewhere, that we're being force-fed so much negativity. As you've made this shift into the corporate world, is that part of your approach, which is to get them more focused on a more positive team approach as it relates to their business, sort of in the same way in which our politicians could, if they wanted to, get our people to focus more in a more positive way as well?
Absolutely, Alan. And in fact, not necessarily positively in terms of thinking, isn't everything wonderful and we're, this is great, but more the positivity of saying, how do we belong as a community? How do we have our tribe within a workplace? Because when you feel like you belong, you can actually take a deep breath and go, it feels a bit safer now. And then actually we can face problems together. So it's not isn't world great? It's we have a problem in front of us. But if I have a problem in front of me and I'm shoulder to shoulder with other people and feel like we're all together, then actually that makes it easier for us to deal with the work issue in front of us.
Well, let's talk about how some of the mental health, I love the fact that you're saying, obviously it's working together. It's working as a team. When you have a divide in a company or in a corporation, and it could be that there's some mental health issues on the part of the owner, or just that we have labor parties that it sometimes will continue to force feed the fact that we want there, they want there to be a divide, as far as the difference between management and labor. How can you come into a situation and help them see that it's a win-win situation for everybody if they can now start to work together and, as you say, work shoulder to shoulder instead of in a more divisive situation?
That's a big question.
Sorry about that. I got on a roll.
Yeah, no, it's great. And in fact, actually, I'd probably the short answer is read the book there's a whole range of different things in the book that talks about how you layer up, about how do you build that sense of connection with others. And there is this, because I kind of divide the book into these three sort of sections. And one is about ourselves and how we show up as individual leaders, and then how do we show up in how we interact with people one-on-one, and then how do we build it from a team perspective. And, one of the things, if I think from a practical perspective, for me, when I start with a new team of people, I always do this exercise with people and ask them to do it with each other as well, which is find out what you have in common with these other people that has nothing to do with work, absolutely nothing to do with work. Because we come back to, and again, I mean, I explain a little bit in the book about the science behind what our thinking brain is doing and what our animal brain is doing. But the animal brain is wired for this connection. It's looking for, do I like you? Do I not? How can I connect with you? And so I have these ways of how you break the ice with people. So I find people that no matter how our differences are politically or our views on how we solve things in the workplace, I have people, like I love cooking and I share a love of cooking with some people. I have a cat, so I share a love of cats with others. I love Star Wars and Marvel movies and I share that with other people. So I explore to try and find things that brings our common humanity together. Mm-hmm. And that's really that starting point of how you get people to work together. And I think back, and this is not my current role, but I think back a couple of roles ago where I was dealing with health and safety related issues, and I would have three different parties because I have a regulator who was very driven on the government, on the rules. I'd have a union and the workers that are sitting there going, we don't really trust people because we think, you're just out to make us work hard and not look after us. And then, of course, we're trying to go, how do we actually create the right safe environment for people? We might all come to it from different perspectives about how we solve the problem, but you keep then anchoring back to what do we have in common here in a workplace as well, which is we have a genuine care for people and a genuine care for making sure that people aren't injured. We might come across it different ways, but let's keep remembering that. So it's A, find out what you have common outside of work, and then B, what's the common theme or humanity about what ties you together that helps you to keep anchoring back when you start splintering out to go, hang on a minute, let's come back to what it is that we believe.
I like that. What are some of the innovations? I know in the book you talk about some of the innovations in mental health that that successful companies are implementing. And what are some examples of those successes?
So I think where companies are getting it right is that they're taking it beyond just a health model, if you like, not just a health model, an illness model. So what I kind of see is that companies go on a journey in thinking about mental health. And so the starting point is some companies don't talk about mental health at all. Others will then go, well, we need to talk about mental health, but actually they're not talking about mental health, they're talking about mental illness. And they're saying, we need to do some things. So if someone has a problem, we can support them. And that's kind of almost like that's a base one that says that if you can see someone struggling, you know the signs that they're struggling and how can you actually offer help and make sure that they get help external to the company. The companies that are really moving forward with this are recognizing the value of mental health, not just prevention of mental illness. And so it's this whole different perspective and getting people to understand this idea that our we're as just as responsible individually for our physical health and our mental health. Right. But actually as a company, we also need to have a look at how is the way we design work and the way that we get teams working together actually impacting on people's physical and mental health. And so giving people a language to understand it, so it demystifies it, and it's not in it's not in an illness model. It's actually in a wellness model of let's talk a language that makes sense to people. That goes, okay, now I understand perhaps what I can do practically and how we can work as a team. And those that are really getting somewhere are starting to then really delve into how do we design our work, how do we design what we're asking of people, so that what we're doing not only doesn't cause problems, but actually enhances people.
Well, first of all, I love the fact that you're focusing on a wellness model, because I think that's the first step of what we need in every business. How do you deal with the stigma? I think that we all know that there is still a stigma that exists in our society for people to speak up when they're struggling. And I think it's probably even worse, you know, when you're in a corporate environment where there's the concern that if you share too much of this, that it could cost you your job. So how are you making it a safe place for them to speak up when they are struggling with some form of a mental illness or issue?
So I'd probably use in the short language, I'd say a language, a safe language, and role models are two of the key things that workplaces are doing. And again, so in fact, in the book, I'll go into a lot more detail on this of trying to help people to go do these different exercises together because it gives you that language. But I'll use a simple example of it from a language perspective. And I've adapted this in the book, but it's this concept of talking about a continuum of mental health from green to yellow to orange to red. And so the way in which why I talk to people about it is saying, I want you to think about your physical health this way, and then let's think about mental health. So physical health, if I'm green, I feel great. So I've slept well, I've done a bit of exercise, I'm eating well, I've got the energy to do what I need to do. And then you go, do you know, physically, we all have our yellow days. So we all have those days where we go, really, I just don't feel as energetic as I used to be. I don't have the energy to, you know, I may not have slept well. I may have drunk a little bit too much. I've eaten a bit too much rich food. I forgot my exercise. Don't feel so great. But I know the things I need to do to bring me back to green before I get to orange. And at orange, I'm likely to need a bit more help to get back, because at orange it may well be that I have some underlying issues. So I might have, I am consistently overweight, or I consistently have headaches, or whatever it might be that just causes some challenges where I go, I really need a bit of extra help to get me back before I get to red. And in red, it's where I need serious medical help because I'm actually not coping. And in talking to people about that physically, I then say, do you know, there's particular reasons why people can land in red all of a sudden. So there can be a traumatic event that lands people in red. And also people can be born with problems, and people can have genetic issues that have them in red straight from the word go, which means that they need lots of medical help. But most people they land in red from a physical point of view because of the choices that they make day to day in their life, what they choose to eat, what they choose to drink, how they choose to sleep, exercise, etc., that puts them in that spot. And it's not the diagnosis itself, but the impact on our daily living that puts us in red. And so I use the example of something like diabetes. I could have a diagnosis of diabetes, but that doesn't mean that I'm in red because I have a diagnosis. I can manage it in how I choose to eat and making sure my sugar levels are okay and keep me back down here in green to yellow. But we all move. We all move in that space. So I kind of introduce people using that concept so that then we go, let's talk about that from a mental health perspective because it's exactly the same. And we still live on this continuum from green to yellow to orange to red. And that, again, in a red space, some people are born fundamentally with problems that actually have them straight away in red. Some people have some genetic predispositions to particular mental illnesses. But the majority of mental illnesses come across, we land in red because of the choices that we make day to day. And so it's helping people learn that. But so, and I won't go into all the detail of that, but I guess just using it as an example. So what we then end up doing to people is say, let's talk about a language that says, oh, I can actually come into work one day and go, I'm just having a bit of a yellow day. So I, you know, or actually I feel like I'm getting to an orange day and I probably really just need a bit of time off just to get a few things done. So it's, I don't have to sit there and go, I'm anxious or I'm depressed or I don't have to explain that more than I'm just like, lifting up my color card and say, this is happening at the moment. So that language, the language is so, so important. And then the role modeling bit is really important. So as a leader, being able to talk a little bit vulnerably about the reality that we all struggle at times, we all have those challenges, and showing that ourselves gives permission for others to do that too.
Now, I'm a firm believer in the connection between our physical self and our mental self. And I love the fact that you brought up our diet, because the more that I've learned about it, the more I realize how important it is, as well as physically moving. So with some of the companies that you're consulting with, and obviously this works in your home as well for everybody out there, what are some of the things that have been really positive in the sense where companies have set up, they've set up a gym or they've set up things that gets people out and gives them the opportunity to work their body physically? I know that in one of the offices that I'm now affiliated with, one of the desks, is set up as a treadmill because that allows them to keep going. I also, at home, I have a pedal desk. So I have a desk that looks like a exercise bike, but it has a desk that's mounted on it. So what are some of the things that you can share that people can do to help the mental side of things by actually focusing on them getting more physically active?
I love the thing. I'm going to have to investigate one of those bikes and desks. That sounds fantastic. So you're right. Some organisations sitting there going, let's have a gym. And so, we have a gym in the basement so you can go and get a bit of exercise done, et cetera. To me, though, the organisational piece is not like, so for organisations sitting there going, well, I can't afford that, or that's a whole other big thing to do. It's far more to me about how you design your work to enable people to do exercise as well. And so being able to go, we can create a bit of flexibility. And again, well, for some organisations, COVID's been a really useful thing to force that innovation into going, how do we create a bit of flexibility so that people go, actually, I don't want to have meetings between 12 and 1 because I want to be able to get out, go and have a run and come back and have a shower and then get back to work. So certainly base facilities like showers or bike racks so that people can actually ride to work and I can actually put my bike there afterwards and then have a quick shower and then head into work. The other thing that I love, and certainly one of the ones that I do often, is walking meetings. And so when I'm catching up with someone one-on-one, I go, right, let's make sure you got sensible shoes on, not shoes, and let's go for a walk, so that you're actually combining the energy of getting out and getting active with being able to connect with people. And in fact, there's also some science around this idea of when you're walking side by side rather than face-to-face. It's a little less confrontational, but sometimes that can open up people to share a bit more as well. So you get both the physical and psychological benefit from it together.
I just wrote down the walking meetings. I love that. And now I'm trying to figure out how I could walk and do this show. I haven't figured that one out yet. I can do it for the audio side. I don't know about how I'm going to do it for the video side. But I do like that one. You know, we've got some questions, and I really appreciate the people that take the time to send in these questions. They're often from teachers or people who are working in the middle of the day, which is great that we're talking about work, that we don't want somebody causing stress in their work because they're sending a message from then right from work. So instead, we get questions where people will send them like the night before or something so that we'll ask it and then they'll listen later on. Yeah. This one reads, I so agree that business managers rarely take into account the mental health of their staff. I don't know who they're agreeing with right now. And that it is human connection that we all yearn for that is missing. Now, years ago, I worked for a small consulting firm in Silicon Valley whose owners and managers generally cared about what was happening in each other's lives. Although I ended up being lured away by a large firm in the city, not realizing that I was trading a warm and caring position for a depressing dog-eat-dog environment. Now, my daughter heads an HR department for a fairly good-sized advertising firm, and from our discussions around this topic, I think your book may be the right message for her as well as for others. And I also believe it's the right time. And this is from Gracie in Utah.
That's so I'm not too sure that Gracie, there's a question there, but a reflection it's in fact, interestingly enough, it's not necessarily size that dictates whether or not you've got that good connection or not, albeit that it is far more likely, you're right, in the big corporates that can get lost because there's too many people and there is that, you know, the greater risk of the dog eat dog of I want to get climbed to the top and therefore, you know, mm-hmm. don't have that sense of connection. But what I do believe is that there is starting to be a bit of a shift, and in fact it's the organisations that get it and shift faster that'll actually have a competitive advantage, where they recognise in a world in which there are so many things that are uncertain, there is so much challenge, if we can create safe space at work, we will win against our competitors. And so mm-hmm. that ability to then go, how do you flip into the dog eat dog world? In the dog eat dog world, absolutely, get your HR people to go read the book, get your leaders to read the book, to go, this is actually what will make a difference in the organization.
All right. We are speaking with Genevieve Hawkins. The book is Mentally at Work, Optimizing Health and Business Performance. Now we're going to take a break. We'll be right back. You're listening to or watching Answers Network.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services and West Shield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. My guest is Genevieve Hawkins, and we are talking about optimizing health and business performance. So Genevieve, I would imagine that much of what you're doing is you're dealing with the leaders, because I would think in many of these situations, it starts from the top. you know, how do you influence leaders about the importance of taking employee mental health serious and employee wellness?
Yes, big question. Look, I'm a big believer, Alan, in starting where you see opportunity as compared to starting where you think the biggest resistance is. I think it's been, you know, it's that whole thing of create the snowball and then it builds from there. And in fact, it was interesting, even when I was writing the book and I had a coach that was helping me to kind of frame up because I was struggling at the beginning to get going with how I was going to write it. And she had this question for me around saying, who's your audience? You need to choose one person for your book. And I'm like, no. I want to write it for managers and I want to write it for HR professionals and I want to write it for this, and this person. They're going, no, choose one person. And so I chose an individual that I had been working with, but senior leader who had some level of inkling in their head that maybe something was going on that they needed to do something about. And that's often the best place to start. So that's what I do, is I look for people where I go, there's some level of curiosity sitting there that something's not right. And in fact, for a number of people, and I think about this individual particularly when I wrote the book, was that when they came to me, and they did come to me, so it was recommended that they come and have a chat to me, they had some concerns with their team. So there wasn't anything about them. They were sitting there going, I've got a concern in my team. I think one of the people in the team is not really well. And I think the team, that there's perhaps the way the workload is, it's not so great. So I need some help. Can you help me? And so I'm like, absolutely, happy to do that. Yeah. And I start, though, with this idea of going, just talk to me about the problem. Talk to me about what's going on. Let's try and understand what you're seeing and observing and what does that mean to you? What does that matter? And being able to not focus on them as a leader but just focusing on the team and understanding the team for a bit, and then starting to talk to him about the language. So let's talk about this language about mental health. Let's talk about how we normalise this issue. Let's talk about what's the language, what's the role modelling. And it was through that then the aha moment came from to go, oh, I probably need to look at myself a little bit here, don't I? And I'm like, why not? Look at you. Okay, let's start back there. So I find sometimes that people will come to me as a leader going, I want help for myself. Can you help me? But more often than not, it was like, oh, there's this thing called mental health and I need to do something. Can you help me? And I go, what's the least threatening way to start that conversation that gets them ultimately realizing they need to own stuff themselves? And it comes back to that whole idea of talking about starting right back at mental health versus physical health and going, we have to own both of them ourselves. And when I talk about leadership, I go, you are juggling three balls constantly when you're a leader. There's this ball called task, because there's a job that you have to do, and if you don't get the job done, you won't have a job. So there's this thing called task. There's this thing called team that says if you don't get the right combination of people doing the right sorts of things, you won't get the task done. And there's this thing called self, and it's this challenge to go, if you want to actually get the right team delivering on the right task, you actually have to put a mirror up to yourself to go, how am I looking after myself in order to show up in the right way, to get my team to show up in the right way in order to get the job done? And there goes the three balls juggling. So it's getting a recognition to leaders that they are vulnerable. They are as vulnerable as the next person if they don't do things for themselves.
Well, when you're talking with this leader and you're talking about those three that they're juggling, let's talk about how important it is, that other one, which is your home life, that if they don't have the home life straightened out, it's going to be difficult to make any of the rest of these function well.
Absolutely agree. And we'd like to think, and I think COVID perhaps has challenged us to realize this, you bring your whole self to work, whether or not you kind of like to or not. Who you are and what goes on outside of work kind of influences what goes on inside work. So you do need to look at what happens outside of work as well. And in the book, I talk about the mental health pie. So I talk about this idea of saying that there are these different things that you need to do that are both outside work and inside work that actually build up your mental health, and you need to do all of those. And that's part of, again, wanting to explain things in this book this way, because I felt sometimes people get focused on one little narrow bit and goes, well, I just need to do that and then I'll be okay. But it's not. It's a whole range of things outside of what happens at work that we need to look after.
Right. And again, you were referring to balls. I have an analogy that I use, which is called spinning pie plates.
Yes.
And there in America, there was these variety shows years ago. This is probably in the 60s, 70s. And this concept of spinning a pie plate, and they would spin one, they would spin another, they would go down a table until they have about 15 of them all spinning. The problem was that when they get to the last one and spin it, the first one that they did is just about to fall and they have to run back. So that's the analogy that I like to use. What do you tell somebody that is spinning too many pie plates?
What do I tell someone? Look, it depends on where they're at that point in time. So, I mean, I may well go, I'm just going to start quickly telling you about the mental health continuum so you can understand what it is. Because then you go, right, let's have a look at where you're at the moment. And often just ask some questions for people around, just talk to me actually about this, like how well are you sleeping? And how often are you exercising? And talk to me a little bit about what you're eating and that sort of stuff. And just that recognition of people saying you are as vulnerable as the next person to land in the red. So you're sitting there thinking, I can keep going, I can keep going, I can keep going, I can keep going. And you're going, you can't keep going. It's going to crash down on you if you don't choose something yourself. Now, for some people, they ignore it and then they do crash and it's sad sometimes, but it's so true that it often takes a crisis of some sort for people to suddenly be faced with their own humanity and realizing that actually, I should say, their own mortality, and to then recognize I do have to make a change. And so what I try and do in the book is try and go, I just need to give you a bit of an understanding of some of these things so that you aren't you're making a choice before you hit crisis point. And so in terms of the continuum, before you hit the red, you recognize, even if you're in the orange, you can be in deep orange, but let's get you some help around it and pull you back so that you can actually get to that first point. Ideally, typically when people come to chat to me, there's at least some level of inkling for them that maybe, just maybe, there's something they need to do. So there's kind of they may sit there and go, I don't know what to do. But that's that starting point. It's like, you know, with Alcoholics Anonymous, so talk about step number one, you have to recognize that you have a problem. Right. That's kind of that before you recognize it, you're not going to change.
Yeah, but I think you bring up a good point when it sounds like, again, like AA, people don't go to AA or call on AA unless they already have a problem. And in the same sense, my guess is that somebody, everything's going real smooth. Everybody's in the green. They don't necessarily call on you. So if they're calling on you, they might be somebody who's proactive enough that they see some yellow, maybe they see some orange. And I would imagine you get some that are already in red.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And it sounds like you're dealing with them a little bit differently, but in any case, using the pie plates, it sounds like you're teaching them to set down a couple before they all fall down.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And appreciate easier said than done. And I think that's part of you know, my drive with the saying that I'm sitting here as an executive myself. I do some coaching work on the side, but I sit here as an executive myself. So I can go, I'm living and breathing this every day. I'm having the pressure of running a profit and loss statement and the performance that we need to get. And so I keep learning every day as well, and in how I'm showing up and going, what's going on for me and where are the things that make it harder? And then how do I go, right, need to remember that so that I can help other people. So it's not an easy thing, but I think it's that starting point of going, we're all vulnerable and we get it usually, like with our physical health, we've got it. We may not choose to do the right thing. We may not choose to eat well or sleep well or not drink too much or all of those things, but we generally understand the things that we need to do to look after our physical health. There's less appreciation of what our brains need to look after our mental health. And that to me is a big part of when someone's got it. There's typically, at least if they think they're fine, there's someone in their team that isn't, that's the opening point to start talking about, well, that's just right now that person's not right, but it could be anyone at any time if you don't look after your mental health.
Couldn't agree more. We have another question that has come in, or comment question. It says, I believe we have a generation of 18 to 35 year olds whose communication preference is texting messages. Like zombies, their heads are buried in their phones almost every waking hour of the day. Do you believe that they have the emotional capacity to become good business managers who can implement the concepts you are speaking about? This is from Brenda in Arizona.
Oh, Brenda, what a great question. So I have a 19-year-old and a 22-year-old, and so I see that generation absolutely. And they're not completely buried in their phones 24/7, but we have to work on it. We have to work on it. So I think that you're right. The way that technology is evolving is causing some really fundamental challenges for us. And people who are caught up constantly saying the only way I communicate is via text and my world is in here does cause us some challenges. So the theory of, you know, even in the next 10 years, 5 years, 10 years, technology will change the way that we work. So we will, in 10 years' time, look back at some of the things we do now and laugh and go, I can't believe that that's what we did, because our technology has gone so far. So technology is giving us lots and lots of benefit. There is a recognition, though, also that in a world in which there are so many things that are done by computers, that the human piece is the bit that computers can't do. The connection, the ability to inspire mm-hmm. and get people together to move forward is the bit that's missing. Now, there are lots of young people who are still caught up like that and missing it, but there are actually also young people who are standing up and being heard and talking about things because they look at the world and go, what have you done, adults? Like, what have you left us with this world that is as challenged as it is? So I do see that there are incredibly determined young people who understand that this is not good enough, that we need to change the world in some way, and actually are smart in how they can use social media to harness that interest, but can actually be inspiring and gather people together. So I do think that there are people that can lead within that, because I'd actually argue in any population of people at any age group, you have some that have a greater capability than others to really communicate and connect and lead. And I'm seeing some incredibly impressive young people who are breaking out of those shackles and going, we want to change the world.
I'm so glad you shared that, because I see that as well. And I think, unfortunately, our media doesn't focus on those that are doing incredibly positive things. And so it's great for more people to hear it. Along those lines of positive things, one of the things that I get asked for more than anything else, or that there's more comments about for this show, is they love success stories. They say that it makes them feel like the examples are things that they can relate to. What would be some, and I realize you probably can't maybe give up the names of the companies or the people, but what would be some success stories where you can show that by making these certain adjustments, they not only improved the quality of their environment at work and improved the quality or the quality of their environment at home, but it also gave them a better bottom line. And I think that's what's going to get the attention of the leaders that are watching or listening right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right. I have to be careful and say, what do I, how can I not give too much away, but be able to do that. It's the key difference that I've seen with organizations that where that's making a difference is that, one, it doesn't happen overnight. So it's not all of a sudden, oh, I just do these four things and there you go, I've done and now I've got, you know, significant improved performance. It takes a series of absolute commitments to these principles on an ongoing basis to actually unlock that performance. But I've seen that grow in organizations, and it's always started, when I say started, the tipping point has been when the CEO has been the one that's, or the actually, in, I think when you talk about presidents and vice presidents, I think in America, we talk about chief executive officers in Australia, but the top person being willing to talk about it is the key turning point to then go, actually, all right, maybe this is okay. Maybe we can start talking about it. Maybe we can now start doing something about it. And then I've seen that shift again then where you go, and then what happens in that leadership team? So often if I get called, when I've been called in to help people, it's often a bubble within the bigger organisation. So the bigger the organisation, the longer it takes to show the entire benefit for the entire organisation. But the faster you do it is actually within the bubbles of particular teams where you go, the leader at the top of that teams of teams is saying, I need to change something. And then you can see the key thing is saying you see cohesion within that group. You see the turnover decrease. You see the engagement score go up. You see the decrease in the amount of sick leave being taken. And you go in there from a cultural point of view and assess what's going on. And you see these rituals that that group of people do that keep them absolutely focused on the problem in front of them that they want to solve, rather than a dynamic between each other. And that's the bit that then that's where I see the performance then gets unlocked. And they solve amazing things together and absolutely deliver to the bottom line, because all their energy is focused on the collective problem, not the dynamic between people.
I love it. So real estate books, they shout location, location, location. Folks, this book shouts connection, connection, connection. So, Genevieve, share with us a little bit about the science behind why connection matters, and if there are any other practical strategies that we haven't discussed that they can look at to help their business, their family, their lives become better connected and more successful.
So let's start with a bit of the science bit first, and without going into too much detail, but trying to understand this idea, and I talked about before about the animal brain and the thinking brain, we have to think about, we would all like to think that we're in complete control of ourselves, but we're not. And so that's kind of point number one with it, is that we have this animal brain that is absolutely hardwired for our survival. And when you think about it, for people who go, that's crazy, you know, I'm in control, you go, well, you don't tell yourself to breathe. You don't tell yourself to digest. You don't tell yourself to sweat. You know, this part, the base part of our brain is actually hardwired for all of those functions that keep us alive. And it can override our thinking brain. And in that animal brain, it hunts for pattern, because pattern gives it meaning. So you're going, I see that pattern and I go, aha, that pattern says I'm safe, or aha, that pattern means I'm not safe. And so I often say, take back to Neanderthal time, because that's kind of an easier kind of concept to think about. Mm-hmm. It makes sense back then that if I'm out there and I see some big, you know, saber-toothed tiger footprints in the ground, that my brain picks it up and goes, oh, there's that pattern that says that's dangerous. I need to do something, because that's not a good pattern. Or I go, I look for signs that go, if I see those sorts of trees, I know water's going to be nearby. That mm-hmm. brain again seeks that pattern and goes, I can make sense of that. So we go looking for pattern, and we go looking then for connection, because again, if you think about back to those times, it's safety in numbers. And so if I'm out there in the wild, or in the middle of nowhere and on my own, that's a pretty scary thing. But when I'm with other people, I can actually feel more like I belong. So in our brain, we have this chemical called oxytocin that gets triggered when we feel like we connect, when we belong with others. And so what that's doing is our animal brain is shooting some chemicals into the rest of our body going, this is good, people. This is good to be with others. Got to have that. Now, the second chemical that's a really, really important chemical is serotonin. And serotonin kicks in when we actually feel like we are valued by people. And it's that idea again, you think about in Neolithic time, you're going, actually, if I'm the person that's really, really good at tracking the footprints to go and kill the wild bear, or I'm the one that's really, really good at throwing the spear to killing the bear, or I'm really good at lighting the fire or finding the great berries to eat, whatever it might be, if I have a role to play, and that I know in playing that role that other people go, oh, that's awesome, thank you. This brain, this animal brain triggers serotonin and it goes, woo, this feels good, this feels good. Because not only am I in a group of people that I feel like I belong, I'm contributing to them in some way, and that really makes a difference. And then the next thing is, because we're hardwired for pattern, there's an interesting thing in terms of dopamine. And dopamine gets a bit of a bad rap because it's often caught up with talking about social media and how people get hooked in looking for the pattern of going, I want this reward bit of seeing more likes, etc. So this is a way in which our brains got distracted into not such a great way. But learning is food for the brain. So in learning new patterns, in looking at the world and going, aha, I've got this new moment, this makes sense, we get a great hit of dopamine. And it's this combination of the oxytocin, serotonin, and dopamine that actually make us feel mentally healthy. The other thing that's really important in it, and we often talk about this as the stress hormone, is cortisol. And so cortisol comes in when things look different. When we feel that we've looked for pattern and things are going, oh, this is not good, or I don't know what this means, or I see a pattern that, you know, it's like my saber-toothed tiger footprints, I can get a cortisol hit because my body is sitting there going, look out, be on alert, something's not right here and we need to change things. And the interesting thing with the animal brain is it can't tell the difference between a physical and a psychological threat. It's just something looks different. If something is not normal or it's a pattern that we've seen before has caused a problem, we can get a cortisol hit. Now, the key thing is, from a mental health perspective, is to recognize when that cortisol is hit and going, hang on a minute, what's my combination of oxytocin, serotonin, and dopamine that I need in order to help balance things out and make sure that I can actually stay healthy? So that's kind of, I'll breathe for a moment because I'll go into practical things in a moment, but I don't know if there's questions there, Alan, about that's kind of a basic science, if you like, about how our brain's operating there.
I think that was a perfect explanation. And as you were saying it, I was thinking about that when I'm speaking to the love of my life and I go off on something and I'll say, oh, I'm sorry. I think that was my monkey brain. My monkey brain just took over. I'm sorry.
We have this interesting brain.
Yes. So anyway, Genevieve, thank you so much. The time has absolutely flown by. Thank you for getting up early to join us. And for those out there, they don't realize that she's joining us from Australia. You probably got that from the accent.
Yes,
but again, folks, it is a great book. And it's one that, although it's written, it seems like it's more for business. Understand that as I was reading it, I felt these same things work with your family. I mean, go ahead.
We do. Yeah, sorry, Alan. No, but they really do. Like whilst the challenge was to say write for a particular individual because it's easier when you're writing to think about this is the language that makes sense there. I'd like to think it's written in an accessible way that anyone can pick it up and go, ah, right, here are some practical things I can do at home. Here are some practical things I can do in the workplace. Here are practical things in terms of how I have conversations with my loved ones, let alone with people in the workplace. Yep. To help trigger the oxytocin and the serotonin and dopamine.
All right. Well, let's hope that we can trigger a lot of that here and have a wonderful rest of the day. So again, the book is called Mentally at Work, Optimizing Health and Business Performance. Is it best to go to your website for this or get it wherever books are sold?
So online in your favorite bookstore, whichever way you want to do it, whether it's through, so I've got it on Audible. And so Audible and Kindle, I know that's Amazon. I mean, there's other ones as well, but Amazon certainly have an Audible, Kindle and paperback. And so if you go onto most online websites, you can, or online bookstores, I should say, that's the best way to find it in America. Otherwise, I'd have to ship it from Australia. So.
Okay. Well, the nice part is that the show's worldwide. So we get people from all over the world that have either called in or sent in messages. Again, thank you so much. And for those, if you want to get a hold of Genevieve or get more information, her website is mentallyatwork.com.au. So, and if you're driving, don't try to write that down. We'll make sure that we have that on our website at answers.network. Genevieve, thank you so much.
Thanks, Alan. It's been a pleasure. I could have been having a conversation with you for hours. So hopefully people have taken a few little practical ideas from it and really encourage you to hopefully read the book, find it of use and spread the word, because that's really, I think we all need to understand this to help each other to be mentally healthy.
Yep. I couldn't have said it better. We will close on that. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Alan.
Now, for everybody, be with us next week when we're joined by the author of The End of Scarcity, The Dawn of the New Abundant World. And don't we hope that that's where we're headed. Now, for everybody out there, visit our archives of past interviews. You can do that at answers.network. Or just subscribe to the show through Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, SoundCloud, YouTube, Rumble, Spreaker, and so many more. And if you like what you hear, please leave a review. I want you to know that it helps us reach more people, and it is greatly appreciated. Be with us to help put out a positive message. We need plenty of those out there. Next time you're on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter, please remember, stop by our page, check out some of our latest shows, and if you like them, please like us and spread the word. For everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers Network.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.